You're listening to the Conservative Underground. I am Doc White. Welcome to the broadcast. So I took a little flack over, what else is new, right? Over some comments I made regarding a university's decision to ban smoking on their college campus, inside and outside. And I hold to my beliefs are personal liberties and individual freedoms are non-negotiable. And I fully recognize the 400,000 plus deaths that the Centers for Disease Control attribute to smoking-related issues in their view, and certainly can empathize with someone who's finding themselves addicted to smoking, who wants to quit and is having difficulty in quitting. I empathize with people who are addicted to a lot of things, food, alcohol, you know, substance abuse, other narcotics. But you yourself have it within you to put that cigarette down and never pick it up again. Every single person out there has that within themselves to do it. Some people it's a little bit more difficult than others. I've seen it done. I've seen people put cigarettes down cold turkey. I've seen people wean themselves off of it. The point is here, folks, if we don't watch what we are asking government to do, we will start to lose, as a society, freedom. And it'll come to a day where, you know, smoking will be banned everywhere, even in your own home. Now, who wants to live in a society where that law is enforced? And then what will be the next law? You know, there are all sorts of things out there that if we choose to abuse them, if we abuse them, whether it be cigarettes or alcohol or something else, are going to cause harm to ourselves. The answer is for us as a society to take personal responsibility. I like cigars. I don't smoke cigarettes. I recognize their addictive nature. I recognize that if I abuse it, potentially there could be some health ramifications. It just doesn't do anything for me. But I do like cigars, and I like to smoke them on the golf course, especially, or out on the back porch in the summertime. But I don't abuse that. I like to have a can of beer, you know, but I don't sit at home and drink 20 beers. I like pizza, but I don't eat pizza three times a day, the whole thing. So anyhow, I want to reiterate it. It's more about being cautious over what we allow government to regulate than anything else. And it's been 50 years since the Surgeon General's warning has been on cigarettes, the packaging, and, you know, just let the chips fall where it may in terms of trying to help people get off of an addiction. Some things cannot be legislated in our society. I came across on social media, and every so often something really cool sprouts up from social media, and this happens to be on Facebook. And I wanted to share this with you because, you know, whether it be you're fighting an addiction or some other maybe mental health issue or something, you know, you need to know that there are people out there who can help you and that you're not alone, no matter how lonely it may seem. And this podcast isn't always about, you know, Democrats or Republicans or something like that. I'd like to think that, you know, along the way, we can help a few people. So I read this on Facebook, and I just wanted to share it with you. And perhaps maybe you could write it down. I've had something similar to this written down on index cards, you know, thoughts and things that come into mind, you know, when you're maybe feeling low or something, and you pull it out, and you read these phrases for self-help. And it says simply, you are good enough, you're smart enough, you're beautiful enough, you're strong enough. Believe it and never let insecurity run your life. And I think that that is something that would be valuable for a lot of people. And I wanted to share that with you. And that's true. No matter who may be listening to this, and I have no idea, but you are good enough, you are smart enough, you're beautiful enough, you're strong enough. And you need to believe all of those things. And never let any insecurity run your life, or else you're going to be in a rut, stuck in a rut, that is a very difficult and bad place to be. So believe in yourself. You can do it. Whatever it is, challenges that you face, especially in the United States of America, this is a great and grand country. And we are very fortunate and blessed, all of us, to live here. So we need to make the most of it and make the most of our lives. That's important too. Let's get the show started, huh? Listening to the Conservative Underground. I'm Doc White. Email me at conservativeunderground1776@gmail.com. Perusing the Drudge Report, and I see a link here that says she makes it official, question mark. It looks like the worst kept secret in American politics is that Hillary Clinton is beginning her run for the presidency for 2016. And this is an email from what is the name of it? Hillary PAC. Apparently, there's some sort of independent organization that's been set up to promote Hillary Clinton. I kind of thought that was CNN. What do we used to call that during the Clinton years? I'm looking at my chief of staff. The Clinton News Network. Right. The ABC, always Bill Clinton. And that's kind of remained true for the nearly 16 years, well, 12 years, that they've been out of office. This email is dated January the 5th, and it comes from General Wes Clark, a longtime Clinton ally. And this is what it reads. It's pretty simple, and I'm going to tell you where I think they're going with the start of the Hillary campaign. And make no mistake about it, this lady's going to run for the presidency. It says, have you picked up your free Ready for Hillary bumper sticker yet? Please take a moment to read this special message from General Wes Clark. Ready for Hillary PAC is solely responsible for the content of this message. And it says, grassroots movements happen when neighbors talk to neighbors and tell them to get involved. One of the best ways to spark these conversations about Hillary potentially running in 2016 is by showing your support right now. Have you picked up your free Ready for Hillary bumper sticker yet? And then it gives the website. Hillary has what it takes to be the next president of the United States, but today, as she decides whether to run, she needs to see our support. Now is the time to get our support for Hillary organized and ready for 2016. Claim your free bumper sticker, proudly show your support, and tell your friends to do the same. Thanks for joining with us, General Wes Clark. Well, it's clear that General Clark is angling to be the Secretary of Defense in a Hillary Clinton administration. But you know where this is going, ladies and gentlemen? This narrative that will be told by, no doubt, without objection or hesitation by the liberal media government complex and the liberal media specifically, is that Hillary's 2016 presidential run, which is underway right now, is a grassroots movement. This is going to be the closest thing to a draft Hillary spectacle that we're going to scenario that we're going to see. I contend that this Hillary pack is designed to make it look like there is this groundswell of support out there for Hillary Clinton, and that she begrudgingly will run for the presidency and do what the American people are asking her to do and get into this race. And that will be how it's sold to us. When in fact, this is a woman who, since her husband's second term in the mid-90s, has been trying to plot a way to become president of the United States someday. This is a power couple. It was about Bill, and now it's going to be about Hillary. And I don't begrudge Bill and Hillary for this, but certainly we have to be aware of what's being manufactured before us and what is, what is reality and what is hype and spin. The whole running for Senate in New York was about becoming president of the United States. When that didn't work, Secretary of State in the Obama administration was all about laying further tread to be president of the United States. Now, you're not going to see, for me, in my life, the Clintons are political enemy number one. You know, these are ruthless people. You mean, you think the Obamas are pretty ruthless, and they are, you know, in their campaign tactics. But the Clintons wrote the book on dirty politics and dirty tricks. And they kind of got swept up in it and bit by the hand that fed them in 2008. But this is not going to be a scenario here in 2016 where we have to just sit back and think to ourselves, well, it's Hillary Clinton. A lot of people don't like her. We have a story to tell on Hillary Clinton, in her liberal record, and where she'll take this country, and who she will empower to do it. And that's what we intend to do here. The Democrats are going to not just nominate, but they're going to anoint Hillary Clinton for 2016. It is as clear as day to me, and this is probably, you could consider this email that was sent out on January 5th by Wes Clark, the Ready for Hillary 2016 free bumper sticker, to be the official announcement for her campaign for the presidency. And, if we on the Republican side think that, someone like Chris Christie is going to be the best opponent for someone like Hillary, then we're going to be treated to a Mitt Romney special in November of 2016. So I've recovered from the it really wasn't a sound defeat, but from the defeat of my beloved Ohio State Buckeyes Friday evening in the Orange Bowl against Clemson. No coach took a swing at any player, so we are ahead of where we were the last time we played Clemson. But it was certainly an up and down season for the Ohio State Buckeyes in terms of the victories were there, 12 victories. But the defensive performance was pretty lackluster. The unit was dinged up, and there clearly is some issues with coaching and scheme and philosophy. But as the college football season winds down, we will have the national championship game, I believe Monday night, against Florida State versus Auburn. My pick in that particular game. Thank you very much. My pick will, I'm going to go with Florida State. You know, typically in these kinds of games where you have a high-octane offense and what appears to be a dominant defense going up against a team that has been more tested through the regular season, it's usually the team that has been more tested is the team that prevails. And you can think back to countless examples, one of which is Ohio State's national championship from 2002. The Miami Hurricanes just buzzsawed through the season, ripping up most opponents, if not all of the opponents that they played, putting up gaudy stats, and the Buckeyes were struggling and didn't look good. It wasn't sexy enough. The point totals weren't there, but the victories were. And when push came to shove, the team that had been tested, the team that played a tougher schedule, the team that had faced more adversity, found themselves in the best position to win the title game. Now, Florida State has gone through the entire season winning by 14-plus points or more and scoring a ton of points in the process. Very talented freshman quarterback in Jameis Winston, who's been through some adversity himself this year, but I don't think as a team, Florida has been put in a position to handle adversity. And when you're in the biggest game of the season, when all the spotlight and all the pressure is on, if that's the first time you as a team face adversity on the football field, sometimes that leads to some mistakes. Sometimes that leads to some internal issues on the sidelines. Just a whole host of things. Meanwhile, you take a look at the Auburn Tigers, who have gone through the SEC. Now, they've beaten Alabama. They, in dramatic fashion, they were up against it. Several games they were up against it and found a way to win. And the teams that find a way to win usually do when it matters. So because of that, that has anything to do with the SEC or the dominant conference or whatever. It's simply I'm taking a look at the path to the title game, and I see Auburn as a team that has been through a lot, who has persevered and have found a way to win. And I look at Florida State, as powerful and statistic-driven as that team is, I have yet to see them be truly tested. Now, maybe they come into this game and they steamroll Auburn, and you can say, well, they were never tested, but they're the national champions. If that happens, then they've earned it, certainly. But I'm going with Auburn as much as my Big Ten loyalties tell me that we can't possibly be giving any credit or rooting for an SEC team to continue that. But until it doesn't happen, it won't, whatever the case is there, that's who I'm going with. So also the big freeze, that's out. This doesn't really do a whole bunch for the global warming crowd, but it does seem that no matter what the weather pattern is, it always comes back to global warming. Whether the temperatures are really high or whether the temperatures are really cool, it all seems to be global warming. It all seems to be man-made climate change, and that the Earth is going to spontaneously blow up in 5 years. And that's what some folks are saying. This new weather system that's sweeping through much of the Midwest and then in the Northeast, they're predicting wind chills of 70 degrees below zero, the coldest in 20 years and life-threatening. I've been through some pretty cold time. I remember in the mid-90s, there was a spell. It was about this time of year where it was 30 degrees below zero. And I can remember a few years after that, and I think it was just actually a few years ago, we had a pretty mild winter where there was very little snow. I remember St. Patrick's Day being, it seemed like it was 70 degrees or so, and that's mid-March. The point of all of this is the climate fluctuates, and we have not been able to record a long enough sampling of the Earth's climate change, natural climate changes, to be able to decide if what we're going through now is man-made or not. The evidence that's been produced is bunk, junk science. Several years ago, it came out that at least I think it was through the UN or whatnot, their science people were doctoring up the evidence, producing false data to show that there is this global warming, man-made climate change. And unless we change our ways, we're going to suffer the consequences. Well, I sit back and I see there's a political agenda behind that. And it's left-wing. It's to promote bigger government, because who's going to protect the climate? Well, of course, government will protect the climate. And all these companies out there that are making a bunch of money, and shame on them, need to be taxed and need to be regulated further because they're damaging our environment. You know, it's just like the smoking thing. Who's going to keep people safe from the evil cigarettes? Well, of course, it's got to be government. You know, when you start to put all of this together, at least I start to scratch my head and say, this is just too much. The government can't possibly regulate, you know, somebody's health, let alone somebody's, you know, climate. Not somebody's climate, but the Earth's climate. So, weather patterns, I know they wanted to blame Katrina on global warming. They wanted to blame Sandy on global warming. They're wanting to blame this historic freeze of wind chills of 70 degrees below zero on global warming. You know, at the end of the day, the Earth's climate, what we do know, what is proven scientific fact, is that the Earth's climate fluctuates. Greenland, for example, has gone through several phases of where it's been, you know, inhabitable area. There have been settlements, colonies, civilization, and then they've been wiped out because it freezes, temperatures drop, and now we're recently seeing a spike back up into the country of Greenland, with some colder temperatures now moving in. So it's been this pendulum, certain parts of the world. That's just one example. It just fluctuates back and forth. And the key takeaway here is the people that are promoting this man-made global warming, Al Gore and the like, are doing it to make some money, and they're doing it to empower government. And for a lot of these people, this is sort of a religion. As scary as that sounds. And you should be scared. You're listening to the Conservative Underground. We'll be right back.
When friends don't stop friends from drinking and driving. Friends die from drinking and driving. Friends die from drinking, and friends don't let friends drive drunk.
Kramer, I've been reviewing your work. Quite frankly, it stinks.
Well, I've been having trouble at home, and I'll work harder, nights, weekends, whatever it takes.
No, I don't think that's going to do it. These reports you handed in, it's almost as if you have no business training at all. I don't know what this is supposed to be.
Well, I'm trying to get ahead.
Well, I'm sorry. There's just no way that we could keep you on.
I don't even really work here.
That's what makes this so difficult.
One of the great shows of all time, Seinfeld, here on the Conservative Underground. We'll be right back.
I'm a paramedic, and it may sound silly, but a lot of people are afraid to call me when they're experiencing chest pain, or to call 911 if they're with someone experiencing chest pain. You know why? Because they think it would be embarrassing if it were a false alarm. Instead, people risk permanent damage or death because they're afraid they might get a lecture. That's ridiculous. So if you have an uncomfortable pressure, fullness, wheezing, or pain in the center of the chest that lasts more than a few minutes, call me. If you have a pain that spreads to the shoulders, neck, or arms, call me. If you have any discomfort in your chest with lightheadedness, fainting, sweating, nausea, or shortness of breath, call me. If you have any of these symptoms or are with someone who does, dial 911 right away. And if it is a false alarm, I'm not going to give you a lecture. I'll be happy to see you. I would much rather treat someone who isn't having a heart attack than to try to save someone who is. To learn more about heart attack warning signs, call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit us on the web at AmericanHeart.org.
Even a chain smoker can quit smoking. In fact, over 36 million former smokers have unchained themselves and quit for good. This free booklet is full of tips on how many of them did it. Call 1-800-4-CANCER. 1-800-4-CANCER. It just might set you free.
Welcome back to the Conservative Underground. Doc White here. Thanks for listening to the broadcast. One of the other stories that keeps spinning around and around and around is this Melissa Harris Perry, MSNBC host, who was conducting a broadcast within the last couple of weeks, and they put a picture of Mitt Romney up there with his grandkids and Ann, and they poked fun at the picture at the expense of one of the Romney's grandchildren, an adopted baby who was black. Is black, and the panelists proceeded to poke fun and to laugh and to mock the appearance of this black baby in the lily white and rich and filthy and disgusting Romney family. Well, it certainly demonstrated the racism that is prevalent in many members of the liberal media, specifically the disgusting crew that they have over at MSNBC, where they have had hosts who have just absolutely said some pretty disgusting things over the last, well, for a long time, but specifically in the last few months, last year, really. There's that one guy who wished that people would defecate in the face of Sarah Palin. Now, this is patriotism, I guess, to some of these folks over on MSNBC. But there really is a large presence, a significant hatred in the pen pusher crowd of the liberal media government complex. And they are obsessed with race and racial issues to the point where they have in turn become racist themselves. And make no mistake about it, what was discussed on MSNBC and what was poked fun at is racism. This is a hatred and a mocking of a family based on simply their appearance and the fact that they would disagree with them politically. And that they and the disgusting part of it is they use a baby to prove a political point. Well, this Melissa Harris Perry issued an on-air apology. Mitt Romney has accepted it. She broke down crying. And I don't know if it's staged, if it's real. Who knows with some of these sickos that are capable of saying some of these things. But I just want people out there to see what liberal humor is. And at the end of the day, it comes back to the same point. That if liberals disagree with someone, hate and venom spews from their mouths or their pens or their computers or whatever. It's who they are. You're listening to the Conservative Underground. I'm Doc White. We'll be right back.
What I remember most is the loneliness I felt, the separation from other people. At the end, drinking was no fun for me. Since I've started to attend AA meetings, the greatest gift is that I've become reconnected. I'm part of life again. I really like myself, and that's wonderful. AA is a miracle in my life. Alcoholics Anonymous. It works. Look us up. Check your phone book, newspaper, or AA.org.
This is Sheriff Cupid B. Justice of Texas.
Texas? You know, of course, that you're out of your jurisdiction. I suggest that you let my department handle the situation.
That's very comforting. But I'm in a high-speed pursuit. Don't you hear good?
I hear perfectly. The fact that you are a sheriff is not germane to the situation.
The goddamn Germans got nothing to do with it.
What do you say?
Shut up one shit at a time.
All right.
You're listening to the Conservative Underground. I'm Doc White. Please tell a friend to tell a friend that we're on and in the air again. You can send me an email at conservativeunderground1776@gmail.com. We'll be right back.
My life was going downhill fast. Everybody was on my case. Now, I kept hoping that life would change real soon. I knew drinking too much messed up my life. A friend suggested I check out AA. It worked. I found myself in an AA group. Finally, I've got my act together. Alcoholics Anonymous. It works. Look us up. Check your phone book, newspaper, or AA.org.
Gosh, Darlene, it sure is amazing how much we have in common.
I know, Larry. We both love three-car pileups. We both were built in Buffalo.
And we both know wearing safety belts helps save thousands of lives.
Yeah, this is fascinating.
Don't mind Vince. He's getting over a bad breakup.
I know. Janet's picking up the pieces, too. They're in here.
I wish they understood it's all worth it to get people to buckle up.
Hey, lacerated lovebirds, I sense a major crush.
You could learn a lot from a dummy. Buckle your safety belt.
Talk about head over heels.
Unfortunately, there is one thing that stands between me and that property. The rightful owners.
80.
30.
50.
Every mile brings us closer.
25.
Every mile in a city near you.
75.
Help us stop diabetes.
100.
Join the Tour de Cure.
60.
Register to ride.
36.
Or sponsor a rider.
50.
Call 1-888-DIABETES or visit us online at diabetes.org/tour. How many miles will you ride?
25.
Welcome back to the broadcast. I'm Doc White. You're listening to the Conservative Underground. Thanks for being with me here. Just like to say that we do a show most nights, Sunday through Thursday, over on Blog Talk Radio, and the ability to call in and interact with me exists over on that format. And then we have a website, conservativeunderground1776.blogspot.com, where you can access the show for free while supplies last as we put the podcasts up, and also various other posts related to the show and to politics, and maybe even some sports and other things like that. Things that I find interesting. And also Facebook fan page, The Conservative Underground Show. We're up over 100 likes now. And please tell a friend to tell a friend. Before we continue on here, there is a sad note, and I was just handed this by my chief of staff here, Brett Myers. I wanted to do this on previous podcast, broadcast here, but we're going to take a moment here to remember and pay tribute to a fellow conservative activist, a blogger, a podcaster in the conservative movement, was lost shortly before Christmas. Those of you over the I think it was within the last month, just before Christmas, the grassroots conservative community lost a true patriot. For 5 years, Tim Curlin, better known as Loki, hosted several shows on Blog Talk Radio and on Red State Talk Radio and the Halls of Valhalla Radio Network. Loki was also an active grassroots organizer in his local community, I think even being elected to the one of the local county party's executive committee for the Republican Party recently. Whatever the forum, you could count on Loki to be a voice in the crowd, always asking, whatever the issue, what's the Constitution say? Loki had a firm grasp on the Constitution. He was a student of history, and he knew his stuff. His respect for our founding fathers, their documents, and our principles ran deep, and he understood those values. Those were Loki's special interests, individual liberty and personal freedom. Whatever else, or whatever issue, agree or disagree, you knew where he stood and where he took his marching orders. Loki was a student of history, a teacher of constitutional principles, a defender of our republic, and protector of its freedoms. To me, he was a friend. He was gracious with his time, always allowing me to speak my mind on his show. He wasn't afraid to engage in debate. He was a formidable debater and someone you hoped was on your side on a particular issue. And if not, you better be ready for a lively conversation. Loki, though, was a gentleman in all forms. This is a testament to his character. Loki was also a veteran, which is a testament to his heart. I enjoyed our conversations, especially on Ohio State and Michigan football, but we did lose a true patriot. We also lost a friend. I thank his wife, Karen, for sharing him with us these many years. May his memory live on in our hearts. May his passion for our republic never die in each of us. And let that be his lasting gift. Loki, until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hands. Good friend Tim Curlin, Loki, Halls of Valhalla. And I still think that they are continuing the show on in some form or another over on Blog Talk Radio. Okay. You know, it's ironic that I'm going to be talking about this next subject here, because it was one in which Loki and I often butted heads over. But I have noticed a uptick on social media and Facebook over the topic of nullification, Article 5 conventions. Now, I'm not going to light the world on fire here with what I'm about to say, but I'm just wanting to share some thoughts with you, as it is my perspective on the way our Constitution works, the way our republic is to work, and the way we as people can again begin to take control of our government, a government that works for us, not the other way around. So many people are and continue to advocate the belief that states, now you've heard this term before, nullification, that states somehow have the constitutional authority, the constitutional right, or whatever, to nullify federal laws that are deemed unconstitutional. Now, one of the big poster childs for all of this is Obamacare. And many in our movement are demanding that states just ignore the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and don't participate in it because they can it's unconstitutional. And within this crowd, there's also the belief that courts are not the final arbiters on what's constitutional and not unconstitutional. Now, there's a whole host of issues that devolve from there, but that's the crux of it. It is the belief of many that nullification is a power that states have on the federal government because the states created the federal government. And the federal government cannot do things that are unconstitutional. You know, folks, the thought there, the passion there, I certainly empathize with, and I do believe that the Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional. But however, we have it, and the federal government passed it, and we have to deal with it. And I do not believe that states have this sort of authority within our constitutional framework. If all of a sudden, and we know we fought a civil war over this, there has been debate from the beginning of our republic to today over nullification and whether or not states have that ability. And in each instance, It's been decided, whether through a civil war in part or through court cases, that sort of constitutional check by the states on the federal government in the specific instance simply does not exist. And if you take it a bit further, this idea of nullification, where we are all constitutional defenders around here, we are acting as if, well, states wouldn't declare unconstitutional laws nullified. They would only do it for unconstitutional laws or unconstitutional measures from the federal government. Well, that's nice in theory. But who's to say that that would always be the case? And additionally, ladies and gentlemen, I would submit to you that the union, our grand union, which that is the prize amongst all that we have to preserve, would not only be fundamentally altered and changed, that this idea of nullification would be the end of the union as we know it, and if not in total. The debt, the other issues, amnesty, high taxes, all of these other things that are crumbling away at our foundations as a republic, certainly are issues we need to address. But this idea of nullification, a group of states just choosing what they want to follow, I think runs contrary to this republic and our sense of federalism that we have developed. Now, this group of folks out there will also then reject what I classify as the nullification alternative. There is a growing movement and sense in the country that perhaps an Article 5 convention on particular issues may in fact need to be called because of the federal government being out of control. Now, if you read the Constitution of the United States, and I do happen to have one handy here, Article 5, there are two ways to amend the Constitution of the United States. One way is for both houses of Congress to pass a resolution, amending the Constitution of the United States by 2/3 majority in each house. And then that proposal is submitted to the states, where 3/4 of the states shall, it's like 36 is required now, to then pass that amendment proposal for it to be an official constitutional amendment. Now, there's another way to amend the Constitution, and that's Article 5. And that states that Congress, whenever 2/3 of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of 2/3 of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states, or by conventions in 3/4 thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first. So there's some technical stuff there, but the critical part here is the application of the legislatures of 2/3 of the several states shall call a convention for proposing amendments. One of the big issues that got the Tea Party going, the main one being the bailout of all these businesses through stimulus and auto bailouts and other things, but that's specific. Generally, though, has been the out-of-control spending by the Congress of the United States, the federal government. We're to the tune of $17 trillion in debt. You know, Obama himself has contributed to roughly $10 trillion of the $17 trillion in debt. And there's a lot of people out there that are frustrated. There's a lot of people out there, part of the Tea Party specifically, that want to reverse this trend and get us back on solid financial footing. well, we've had the Congress, you know, screw around and try to pass a constitutional amendment for a balanced budget, requiring Congress to balance its books every year. It fell one vote short in the Senate in the late 90s, and it hasn't been brought up again. The Tea Party folks have attempted to make this part of budget negotiations, whether it be on the increase of the debt ceiling or passing a budget for the United States to keep the government running, because this debt is going to crush, if not this generation, but certainly the next and future generations. We're $17 trillion in the hole just to get back to even, just to have nothing. And this is serious, very serious stuff here. And it's being the future, the bounty that this generation and future generation and past generations has worked for to provide for future generations is being totally and completely misappropriated and spent by the elected leaders in the United States Congress. And by being able to spend this amount of debt, they're keeping programs afloat for personal political reasons like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. I'm not suggesting an abolition of those programs. I'm suggesting that they can't even be reformed because we continue to deficit spend and debt spend and borrow to keep them going. Now, that's a kind of a simplistic view, a very focused point on each of that could take hours to discuss. But this is one of the issues where the Congress of the United States has been incapable of addressing or negligent in addressing. And there are many folks out there who feel, well, if Congress isn't going to do its job, then we're going to petition through Article 5 to call a convention and amend the Constitution through that mode. Now, it's important to note that the detractors of the Article 5 convention fear that once this thing is called, then the delegates assembled will begin to take up other issues and could potentially make suggested amendments that would be contrary to where we would stand, for example, as conservatives. One such fear is abortion could be brought into the discussion. I certainly understand the hesitancy to invoke an Article 5 convention process. It hasn't been done before. It would be uncharted territory. But ladies and gentlemen, this is the nullification alternative. And what I would say to the people out there that are fearful of this runaway convention, the states are capable of passing resolutions calling for this convention and containing within those resolutions the desire that a particular issue be brought up. And that if other issues are brought up, that state's delegates will be recalled or prevented from voting on anything other than what's called upon in a resolution to Congress calling for this Article 5 convention. Now, this is very simple. And right now there's a movement out there to call an Article 5 convention for the purposes of discussing a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution to get government back within its means. And it seems to me that this is a far more desirable approach than states nullifying laws. And we'll continue this debate. But I wanted to get that out there and get the discussion going on this important issue because, you know, we're talking about defunding Obamacare. Well, the disaster that's going to be Obamacare could be addressed by the states, but not through nullification. I would contend that we could call a constitutional convention through Article 5, banning through, if it's ratified by, and that's the important point I don't want to step over here, is that the convention that would be called would serve the purpose of the Congress. They would propose amendments that would then go back to the states and still require three-fourths of the states, whether through their legislatures or through a convention held within the state, to ratify that to the Constitution. So the idea that this Article 5 convention could pass anything they want is a bit far reach, and it's just inaccurate that those things that were passed would be a part of the Constitution without a vote of the state legislatures. Now, if you think there's 36 states that would vote to make abortion legal in the United States, then maybe you've got something to worry about. But I would say that you're probably being a bit paranoid there. So in any event, we could have a constitutional convention that would, through Article 5, because, you know, Harry Reid in the Senate would never let anything like this get through, that would ban nationally sanctioned health care, Obamacare. The federal government of the United States would be prohibited from participating in health insurance, national health insurance, being involved in health care at all. Now, wouldn't that be interesting? You know, ladies and gentlemen, we get frustrated. We see things happening around us that we feel isn't right. But knowing what the Constitution provides to us, knowing that the rights that we have is the most powerful defense against liberal tyranny that we have out there. And being organized through these kinds of grassroots networks, social media, is a surefire way to beat them back. And that's where we're at. Take our final break here. You're listening to the Conservative Underground. I am Doc White. We'll be right back.
In tough economic times, even a trip to the grocery store means balancing healthy family meals with the need to keep expenses down. For a healthy, balanced diet, you need a good mixture of protein, carbohydrates, veggies, and whole grains. Keeping your costs low means cutting back on restaurant food and most prepared food in grocery stores. A whole chicken goes for only about $2 a pound. A pound of beans will set you back a whole $1.50. Potatoes! Look at these complex carbs at 89 cents a pound. What this means is cooking. Bust out those cookbooks. And remember, the best part of home cooking is the leftovers. Don't ignore packaged foods entirely. You can find great deals on items like albacore tuna and bristling sardines, which are not only cheap, but a great source of protein and essential fatty acids. Visit cheapcooking.com or sardinediet.com.
Hey, Sam. Hey, back from the Denise Decathlon, huh? Got another gold medal in the broad jump?
Yeah, you got a big mouth, Clayton.
Hey, happens to be right, you know. Yeah, it's a genetic quirk in the Clavin family that we all have two extra teeth. You see, that's the only way that we can prove that we are the rightful heirs to the Russian throne.
Hello in there, Clef. Tell me, what color is the sky in your world?
You're listening to the Conservative Underground. Doc White here. We'll be right back. Final segment of the show coming up.
If a fire breaks out in your home while you're asleep, how will you know? Smoke and heat build quickly, making every second count. A working smoke alarm can alert you to the danger and make the difference between life and death. Install and maintain a smoke alarm on every level of your home. Replace the battery every year. This message is brought to you by the United States Fire Administration, your local fire department, and this radio station.
what if we got rewarded for every good decision?
Dinner. Meal needs a vegetable. Check.
Amazing!
Vegetables cooked with a healthier oil instead of butter?
Fantastic!
Replacing bad fats with healthier fats like those in canola or vegetable oil is good for your heart. Take up the challenge for good health because the you of the future will say,
fantastic!
Visit heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info proudly supports the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Conservative Underground. Doc Wise here. The last thing I have on my plate here that I want to talk about, and this is sort of more of a like a warning. There is going to be a massive attempt by the left, starting yesterday, to flood our media over this general topic of income inequality. Now, it's been no secret that the left has been trumpeting this idea that they are the champions of the great middle class in the United States. We heard a lot of that in 2012. And in some respects, it worked for them. They're going to pivot back to that for 2014 because of the midterm elections. And they think that this narrative works for them. But also, they're doing this, in my view, because we still have Benghazi out there. That's not going to go away. That's the terrorist attack that occurred in Benghazi, Libya, on the anniversary of 9/11, where four Americans were killed, an ambassador among them, and the Obama administration tried to blame some obscure YouTube video as an incendiary device in promoting this terrorist attack, when in fact, it was a premeditated orchestrated attack by Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups that this government knew was a real possibility, but yet chose to punt on doing anything about it because we were trying to get Barack Obama reelected, and he was trying to make the case that he had Al-Qaeda on the run. So we couldn't allow, in the middle of an election, for a terrorist attack to occur and jeopardize that narrative. And there's a whole bunch of other sorts of key points in all of this that I don't have time to get into now, but Hillary Clinton is at the center of this. And it's clear that she was aware of the dangers, and she did nothing about it. So no one has really had to answer for this, and it's out there. It's real. And we also have this Obamacare rollout that's been a disaster. And not only is the website a disaster, but the law itself is really crimping the styles of a lot of people in the United States in terms of their health care. And there are people that have made it through the Obamacare healthcare.gov website, and they think they have health insurance, and they don't have health insurance because their information hasn't been processed by the insurance companies yet. Wait till that hits. There's been reports now that there's folks that have been in the emergency room and went in for treatment, claimed that they had health care, and were told, you don't have health care. And one guy was waiting around to be treated, got so anxious and so worked up because he didn't have health insurance when he thought he did, that he had a heart attack. People are walking out of the emergency rooms. So this is something that the Democrats cannot afford to have on the front burner for a conversation. So they're going to pivot to income inequality, minimum wage, and amnesty. And we have to be ready for that.
Out the lights, the party's over. They say that all good things must end.
Now that's all the time that we have for this broadcast, but I bring that up because this whole income inequality thing, they're going to blame the richest 1% for all of our problems. The amount of money that the 1% make at the top has no bearing on how the bottom 20 can get up out of their problems. We'll be right back.